Hi, I'm Paul DeLon with Texas A&M AgriLife Research in Vernon, Texas. Today I'll be talking about implementing no-till and cover crops in Texas cotton systems. The research I'll be presenting today is from Texas, but it's applicable to the entire cotton belt and will generate ideas for other cotton systems throughout the region. Conservation agriculture is a growing arena in agriculture across the U.S. Recent surveys by USDA ERS have shown differences among regions in the U.S. as well as among crops. So this is survey 2018 by the Economic Information Bulletin number 197, looking at conservation tillage practices based upon survey response. Conservation tillage is defined as no-till, strip-till, mulch tillage, so it includes those three tillage practices. And looking at four major crops in the U.S., soybean, corn, wheat, and cotton. Conservation tillage is used roughly on 65-70% of corn, wheat, and soybean acres, but when you look at cotton acres, only about 40% of cotton acres are under some form of conservation tillage. And then this further varies by the region as well. If you look at the map on the left, highlighted for the southeastern U.S., about 68% of cotton acres are under conservation tillage, whereas if you look at the southern Great Plains region, you're looking at about 27% of cotton acres adopting conservation tillage. And these are based upon survey respondents. A ERS survey in 2016 estimated only about 16% of cropped acres in Texas were under conservation tillage. So needless to say, cotton acres lag behind other major crops in the U.S. for implementing conservation tillage. And in Texas, conservation tillage is not often used. And there are also monoculture systems that are predominant, so cotton on cotton year after year. Survey also showed less than 3% of continuous tilled cotton acres adopt conservation crop rotation. We do have a concern for cotton acres, and the adoption of conservation agriculture and crop rotation. So cotton is a low-residue crop, hence residue management is important. Continuous cotton systems is going to no-till enough to provide ecosystem services such as increased water capture, infiltration, reduced runoff, those type of things. If you're not using crop rotation and you're only using no-till, these are pictures of conventional till on the left, no-till in the middle, and no-till with a terminated wheat cover crop on the right. And this is after about 5 years of implementing no-till in this system. So if you're interested in building up residue, then a cover crop may be a viable option that can add beneficial residue in the continuous cotton system. So when you're talking about no-till and cover crops in cotton, the numbers that I presented earlier may be lower than other crops, but no-till acreage has increased in cotton over the past few years. Conservation tillage in our region, strip-till versus no-till, a lot of questions are asked about strip-till rather than going to no-till. So I'll talk a little bit about strip-till and no-till today. With cover crops, there's a lot of questions, a lot of information that needs to be gotten from cover crop research. One is, what is your goal? How do you want to manage a cover crop? Do you want to increase organic matter? Are you looking for enhanced weed control, erosion control through wind or water, enhanced nutrient cycling? So there's a lot of questions regarding cover crop use. And then other questions with cover crops is when and how to plant or terminate the cover crops. Depending on what region of the country you're in, for instance, let's say you're in Texas, if you are planting cover crops after harvest of cotton, that may be too late to drill in a cover crop and get a good winter establishment to protect the soil over the winter. So you may look at modifying a drill or even using broadcasting prior to harvest. And then on the backside of that, in the spring, how do you terminate the cover crop and when do you terminate the cover crop? So there's a lot of questions concerning cover crop, which may hinder some adoption. So hopefully we can address some of these questions today. So I would like to describe just a little bit about cover crop management in our research. In other words, how we manage cover crops in the research that I'll present today. Number one, we're not trying to produce an award-winning crop. And what I mean by that is we want our cover crops, of course, to establish and do well, but we're not trying to make it look better than our cash crop. We want a cover crop to do its job, and that's to germinate, secure, hold the soil in place. Really not concerned about producing biomass that may be unrealistic in some situations. We also do not seed at full seeding rates. In other words, I always tell our producers we're not trying to match what we may see in a farm magazine. And this varies depending on what region of the country you're in. For instance, if you're in Georgia or North Carolina, you may see seeding rates of, say, rye at 120 pounds per acre, versus as you move further west and get into Texas, 15 pounds, 30 pounds, and I think the NRCS recommended rates are 50 to 60 pounds at the time. So we're using lower seeding rates. For example, for wheat, planted as a cash crop is 60 pounds per acre. So if we're using wheat as a cover crop, why would we plant at 90 pounds per acre? So we're using half rates for wheat, for example, and typically plant at 30 pounds per acre. So lower seeding rates is what we have been using in our environments in West Texas. We also do not fertilize cover crops. I know this is more common in the Southeast, as you may be more concerned with producing more biomass. Fertility may be needed in order to produce the biomass that you're targeting. In our environment, we're looking at holding soil in place and mining nutrients that may have escaped or gone below the cash crop rooting zone. So low input is the system that we're looking at. Under irrigated conditions, we typically do not irrigate cover crops. We have had conditions of exceptional drought, which may require irrigation. But again, the idea is for the cover crops to sustain soil moisture or to enhance water infiltration and capture, so we don't want to use critical or precious water resources for the cover crop. Now, if you need to produce biomass in drought conditions, then irrigation may be necessary to produce the desired amount of biomass. As far as herbicide applications, we do apply in-season herbicides to cover crops as needed and feasible. Now, with the recent interest in using cover crop mixtures rather than single-species cover crops, this becomes a little bit more of a gray area. For instance, in a cotton crop, if you have a small grain cover crop, and as you're entering spring and you have some broadleaf weed issues, you could apply broadleaf herbicide. Whereas if you have a mixture that has broadleaves and grasses, then that may be an option that may not be available to you. So that's another consideration. The cover crop that you choose, what is your weed situation, and what is the herbicide program that can fit into that system? The bottom line with our cover crop management is that we hope to keep management as low as possible. I'm not saying that you don't have to manage cover crops. What I mean by this is we hope to keep inputs as low as possible. You do have to manage your cover crops. That's very important. But we hope to keep our inputs as low as possible for our environments. So the research I'll be presenting today, most of that research has been collected at the Texas A&M AgriLife Chillicothe Research Station, just outside Chillicothe, Texas. It's in the Texas Rolling Plains in North Texas. The farm has clay loam and sandy loam soils, a mix of those. The research trials I'll be presenting have been in place from a single year up to 12 years in length. We have subsurface drip irrigation, where we have crop rotation and cover crops. We have pivot irrigation, where we have cover crop research. And then we have dry land plots as well, looking at crop rotation and cover crops. So the first slide I'd like to show you is cover crop seeding rates and the effect on biomass production. So on the bottom x-axis, this is the seeding rates for rye and Austrian winter pea. So we seeded rye and Austrian winter pea at 15, 30, 60, and 90 pounds per acre. And the rye is presented with the green line. The pea is represented by the red line. The scale for the hairy vetch is on the top x-axis in purple. And we seeded hairy vetch at 5, 10, 15, and 20 pounds per acre. And then on the y-axis would be the biomass production of the cover crop. And as you can see, for the rye, our highest biomass production was with 30 pounds per acre. And then if you look at the Austrian winter pea, you can see the biomass production plateaued after 30 pounds per acre, so no differences between 30, 60, 90 pounds. And then the hairy vetch, the optimum seeding rate was between 10 and 20. There's no difference between 10 pounds per acre and 20 pounds per acre. Dr. Stephen Mirsky, USDA ARS in Beltsville, Maryland, performed a research study similar to this along the East Coast, looking at hairy vetch seeding rates from about 5 pounds per acre up to 45 pounds per acre. For North Carolina area, they found that the optimum hairy vetch seeding rate was less than 10 pounds per acre. So higher seeding rates do not always translate into higher biomass production. So that's very important to know as far as seeding rates, because cover crops are not free. They do cost money. So as you increase seeding rates, you increase your input cost. So what we've seen And this is only from 1 year of data, 2018-2019. But we're seeing the same trend as what Dr. Mirsky observed on the East Coast. Higher seeding rates do not translate to higher biomass production. And we've seen this for three different species here. Ray White, graduate student of Dr. Wayne Keeling and Dr. Katie Lewis at Texas A&M AgriLife Research in Lubbock, they have evaluated rye and wheat at 30 and 60 pounds per acre and found no differences in biomass production for wheat or rye at those two different rates, with rye producing a bit more biomass than wheat. But again, another location showing lower seeding rates providing optimum cover crop biomass production. This is a slide of canopy coverage. This is using an app. Take a picture, and it calculates the percent of ground coverage or surface cover by the cover crop. So again, on the lower x-axis, this would be rye and Austrian pea seeding rate. Again, at the 15, 30, 60, and 90 pound per acre. Rye in the green, pea in the red. And then hairy vetch seeding rate on the top x-axis at 5, 10, 15, and 20 pounds per acre. And just as you saw with biomass production, higher seeding rate does not lead to more canopy coverage. And this was taken a couple weeks before termination, so early April is the time period. The greatest canopy coverage for rye, for example, it was the same at 30 pound per acre versus 90 pound per acre. Over 90% for the pea was at the lower rate of 30 pounds per acre, more coverage than the 60-90 pound rates. And then hairy vetch saw very similar canopy coverage across the seeding rates between 5 and 20 pounds per acre. So the canopy coverage was essentially the same across those seeding rates, although the biomass production may have varied, but we did have complete ground coverage or close to it with the hairy vetch. So once again, higher seeding rate doesn't equal higher biomass or greater canopy coverage. These are pictures of cover crop termination prior to planting and then after planting cotton. So on the left is a picture of cover crops, legumes versus grasses, the hairy vetch, Austrian pea, and rye. So one consideration is lasting residue. You have legumes, they break down more rapidly, versus if you have a grass, a small grain, that's more lasting residue. If you allow that residue to get to a stage such as at least 50% heading or past the boot stage in the leaf. So the longer you let a small grain go, becomes more mature, then you terminate that, the longer lasting that residue will be. But this is just an example of 3 weeks after termination. You can see how those legumes in the foreground brown, you can see some of the bare ground, so it degrades very rapidly and goes away. Whereas if I had a close up of the rye, you can see that residue would last about 18 months in some cases. On the right is a long term hairy vetch plot that we've had in place for 7 years. And this is cotton emerging or coming up in the hairy vetch plots. One question we have is, what modifications do you make to a planter? Concerns with, are you able to plant through that? Some people say, well, that's a mess if you have peas or vetch. How will you ever plant through that? Well, if you're terminating in Texas, in our case, 3 to 6 weeks before planting, that residue has dried down and degraded very rapidly. And we plant this cotton with a John Deere MaxiMerge, making no modifications to that planter. We have factory residue cleaners on the front. As you can see, we had no problems with stand establishment with cotton and the hairy vetch residue. So next I'll talk about some of the data that we gathered from subsurface drip irrigation at Chillicothe Research Station, and this is on a clay loam soil. So this is data from a 3-year average, and this is when we were transitioning into no-till. So this is the first 3 years entering into a conservation tillage system. So there's been research that shows that it may take 3 to 5 years transitioning into a no-till system before things start to settle down, so to speak. So we wanted to evaluate that at various irrigation levels. This is irrigation levels 0, 33, 66, 100, and 133% ET replacement. We have 4 tillage treatments: conventional tillage, which is bedded or listed ground, reduced tillage, no-till, and then no-till with a terminated wheat cover crop, represented by the green bar. So this is lint yield on a 3-year average, 2008-2010, again, the first 3 years of that. Really, for each irrigation level, we saw very little differences in yield. At the 100% ET replacement, we saw the greatest differences, or the most benefit of no-till systems had higher yield than the conventional till or the reduced till. For the 0% or the dry land treatment, conventional till and no-till with the cover was very similar. no-till and reduced-till had higher yields. So this may have been a red flag or concern. If you're under dryland conditions, a cover crop may be a greater risk. But the yields are very similar to what a conventional till system provided to us. With cover crop, economics always is a concern or a question. So this is net return of that system for the first 3 years. For conventional till, reduced till, no-till with a cover crop, and then no-till without a cover crop. So with a cover crop is the blue bar, no-till without a cover crop is the green bar. And for both of those systems, our net returns were significantly greater over our conventional till system. So transitioning into a no-till system, our net returns were statistically greater for no-till systems than our conventional till system. These are two pictures of planting into no-till systems with that same planter that I referred to earlier. The left picture would be cotton that is in a no-till with a wheat cover crop, and you can see the wheat residue there. And you can tell that this is late in the season. You can still see that wheat straw standing from where we chemically terminated it and left it standing late into the season. And then on the right, that'd be two different irrigation levels. This is just to show you stand establishment in a no-till system of cotton. So you can see no issues there with stand establishment and no-till. The benefits of crop rotation is important as well. And as I stated, within Texas, there's a lot of continuous cotton systems. So we compare continuous cotton versus cotton following sorghum and also cotton following guar. And we have the same four tillage treatments for the continuous cotton and the cotton sorghum. We only have no-till and conventional till for the cotton following guar. And this is 1 year of data. If you look at cotton following sorghum, which would be the middle set of bars, you can see that our conventional till and strip till yields were higher for cotton following sorghum compared to continuous cotton, which would be the left set of bars. And then really no differences for cotton following guar compared to cotton following sorghum. But for each of these systems, no-till with or without a cover crop were similar yields across all systems. What may be interesting here is really the conventional till and strip till seem to suffer in the continuous cotton system for this particular year in the rotation. But again, crop rotation, there are benefits there, particularly adding residue to that system. So this is water extractable organic carbon based upon the Haney test, the soil health assessment, which you may or may not be familiar with. The Haney soil health assessment is a standard several producers use to measure progress in soil health. So this side represents the water extractable organic carbon, which is that fraction of the carbon that may be used as an energy or food source by the soil microbes. So we have the four tillage treatments, conventional till, strip till, no-till, and no-till with the wheat cover crop. The red bars are continuous cotton. The blue bars are cotton following sorghum. Now, we didn't see any differences between tillage treatments, but for each tillage treatment, you can see cotton following sorghum had higher water extractable organic carbon than a continuous cotton system. So adding a high residue crop such as sorghum into a cotton system can pay dividends as far as providing some enhanced soil health parameters such as, in this case, water extractable organic carbon. Two graphs of physical properties that we evaluate in these plots as well. One, infiltration rates, and two, penetrometer data or penetration resistance. The left bar graph is infiltration. So we used a single-ring infiltrometer, and we measured the time for 1 inch of water to infiltrate completely into the soil. And once that occurred, we immediately applied another inch of water and repeated. That would be a time one and the time two that you see on the x-axis. So the red is conventional till, the yellow being strip till, blue is no-till, then green is no-till with a cover crop. At the very beginning, I said it's no-till enough in a continuous cotton system. So when we look at that infiltration rate, and if you just look at the first three bars comparing conventional till, strip till, and no-till, we saw no differences in water infiltration. Now, this occurred shortly after planting, so the conventional till and strip till, it had not been long since those tillage treatments had been implemented. But no-till provided no added benefit or enhanced infiltration over conventional till and strip till. However, if you look at the no-till where we had the terminated wheat cover crop, you can see we greatly increased infiltration rates at both the time one and the time two. So adding a small grain cover crop in this continuous cotton system greatly enhanced our infiltration rates. Soil strength or penetration resistance, the line graph on the right side, the red and yellow, would be strip till and conventional till. Then the blue and the green would be the no-till, with and without a cover crop. Now, remember, this is a subsurface drip irrigation system. So typically the tillage is 4 to 6 inches. So we're not risking hurting or tilling up our drip tape that is about 12 inches under the soil surface. But that plow pan has began to develop at the 10 to 15 centimeters, so that's the 4 to 6 inch area. And as you can see with the blue and the green line, that line begins to go straight down at that depth. So we've alleviated that plow pan or that compaction layer by implementing a no-till system. So even though we didn't see an increase in infiltration with no-till without a cover crop, we do see alleviation of compaction at the lower layer with both no-till systems, with or without a cover crop. Stored soil moisture is a chief concern for cover crop systems in semi-arid environments. So this is a graph looking at stored soil moisture and the impact of cover crop on stored soil moisture and also timing of termination. So on the left side of the graph, in about May of 2016, if you look on the x-axis, the green line is where we have a wheat cover crop in the no-till system. So you can see there in March, April, right at termination timing, we have a water deficit in the top 2 feet of our soil profile where we had the wheat cover crop. However, with the rainfall event in May, by the time we planted and got into planting season, all the treatments were very similar and the stored soil moisture was the same for all treatments. The following year, in March of 2017, due to herbicide drift, we accidentally terminated some of our cover crop treatments 6 weeks ahead of schedule, so we ended up terminating all of our cover crops that year early. And as you can see, by terminating it earlier in March, you don't see as much of a deficit for early termination versus letting that wheat mature out and reach past boot stage or get into heading stage. However, there's no differences once you get in the cotton growing season between either year. And for this particular year, in May of 2017, the wheat cover crop from 2016, you could still see the stalk or the residue of the wheat from a year prior, whereas the wheat terminated only 6 to 8 weeks earlier, that residue had degraded and you cannot see that residue. So again, based upon timing, give and take something to consider. You do use more moisture as time goes, but you have longer lasting residue the longer you let the cover crop grow. And for each scenario, we've seen there be no differences in stored soil moisture during the cotton growing season. So this is cotton link yield for a 6-year average for the years 2013 through 2018 for that subsurface drip irrigation system. So left to right, conventional till is in the gray, strip till represented by yellow, no-till in the blue, and no-till with the wheat cover crop in the green. And on a 6-year average, and this is years 6 through 11 of that system, you can see from a statistical perspective, we have increased our link yields with no-till, with and without a cover crop over our conventional till. Strip till is somewhat intermediate, but lower than no-till with a wheat cover crop. So in the long term, a system that's been in place for, in this case, 11 years now, no-till with a wheat cover crop had the greatest yields across all tillage treatments. This is a slide of irrigation water use efficiency for those same 6 years. And this is simply defined as the amount of yield per amount of irrigation water applied. And the irrigation water use efficiency mirrored that of yield. Again, no-till with a wheat cover crop had greater irrigation water use efficiency than both strip till and conventional till, and no-till without a cover crop was greater than conventional till. No difference between strip till and conventional till from statistical perspective. But again, see an enhance in water use efficiency where we have implemented no-till and a cover crop. Next, I'll talk about pivot irrigated cotton. For this system, we implemented in 2012, looking at two different cover crop options, small grain wheat, and then a mixture of several different species. At this time period, back in 2012, this is when the NRCS rolled out their soil health initiative, which really introduced the concept of using multi-species mixtures. And as you can see in the table provided, that mixture has evolved over time. So in 2012-2013, we have a 6 or 7 species mix, including rye, wheat, Austrian pea, hairy vetch, crimson clover, turnip, and radishes. But also over time, we recognize not all of those species were contributing to the mix or even germinating at all. over time, we've refined that basically to a four-species mix, rye, wheat, Austrian pea, and hairy vetch. Now, one thing I need to mention is for all the research I've been showing you today, we are planting these cover crops after cotton harvest. So for legume species, that's typically later than ideal. Usually like to get legume species in about 6 weeks before the first freeze. In some cases, we're planting these after the first freeze. In the research I'm showing you, typically we're planting from last week of October at the earliest through the first week of December. Typically, we like to get it in first couple weeks in November. So it's later than ideal. We don't have a lot of cover crop growth or canopy coverage in the fall, early winter, and through the winter. Most of our growth is taking place during the spring in the March and April period. Top right picture is a picture of the wheat cover crop versus the mixture. And the wheat cover crop on the left, shorter in stature, where we have rye. And as you can see, that rye is heading out, and this is just prior to termination. This is under Lisa pivot irrigation, and we irrigated about 85% crop ET replacement. This is link yield over a six-year period for that system. Link yield in pounds per acre. No-till being in the yellow, conventional till in the gray. Wheat cover crop represented by the green bar, and then the yield for the cover crop mixture in the red bar. And over the six-year average, there's no differences in yield among treatments. Over that six-year period, I think there's 1 out of 6 years where we saw significant differences. In that year, the greater yields were with the wheat and the mix cover crop over the no-till without a cover crop and conventional till without a cover crop. So in this case, no differences among these tillage treatments for the first 6 years of implementation. The no-till systems that had the wheat and the mixed cover crop species numerically had about a 4 to 6% higher yield on a six-year average. This is a slide showing the economic returns as well as the cost involved with each of these treatments for the pivot irrigation system. So the black bars represent the cost and the gray bars represent net return. Now, I remind you that cost includes the cover crop seed cost, but also includes the cost of harvest and ginning costs. So typically, the higher yields translate to higher ginning cost, higher harvest cost. So when you look at the cost of each system, it's not only the cost of the cover crop seed, but it also accounts for the harvest cost as well. So the mixture had the highest cost, higher than conventional till and no-till. And then the wheat cover crop had a higher cost than no-till without a cover crop, but it was not different than conventional tillage. Even though the costs were higher for those cover crop systems, the net returns were not different across any of the treatments. So one question being, can you recover the cost of a cover crop? In this case, in an irrigated system, we were able to recover our cost and net returns more similar across all treatments. This is data from my counterpart, Dr. Katie Lewis, Texas A&M AgriLife Research in Lubbock, Texas. And this is data from La Mesa, Texas. And this is published in the Agronomy Journal. She compared conventional tillage, no-till with the rye cover crop, and no-till with the mixed cover crop. The mix was introduced in 2015, but the rye cover crop had been in place since 1996. So a long-term system that had been in place for nearly 20 years. And the lint yield observed in 2015 and 2016, no differences in 2015, but the rye cover crop resulted in lower yields than conventional till in 2016. And this is under a pivot irrigated system as well. Why is this? This is because it's a drier environment than where Chillicothe is located, possibly, but it can also be explained by other factors. So Dr. Wheeler and Dr. Lewis decided to test for root knot nematodes in this system as well. As the graph shows, nematode populations were greatest for the no-till system with the rye cover crop, and it kind of mirrors what they saw with yield in 2016. Some cover crops can be a host for root knot nematodes, so that's just something to consider if you see reduced yield. We couldn't link this to soil moisture use because they see similar soil moisture dynamics as what I showed earlier. Through further testing, decided it was a nitrogen deficiency. But testing for root knot nematodes may be a reason for reduced yield in that particular year. Testing, thinking about all the reasons, perhaps planting a root knot nematode resistant variety may be applicable for this scenario. This is a graph of soil strength or soil resistance at the La Mesa location. The picture on the right shows the long-term no-till with the rye versus conventional till, which is bedded. This is on a sandy loam soil, again under pivot irrigation. The blue line is the no-till with the rye cover crop. The red line is the conventional till plot. And again, you can see alleviation of the plow pan. This is 15 and 16 years after implementation of the no-till system with the rye cover crop. And at that 4 to 6 inch layer, or 10 to 15 centimeter layer, you can see the blue line kind of goes straight down to a depth of 12 inches, whereas you see more compaction with the conventional till. So over time, in the long term, we've alleviated some compaction concerns by using a cover crop. Lastly, I'll cover dry land scenarios. Within Texas, that would be an area of greatest concerns or greatest risk with implementation of a cover crop. So we evaluate no-till and conventional till without cover crop, and then we looked at various cover crop species. We looked at Austrian winter pea at 35 pounds per acre, crimson clover at 15 pounds per acre, hairy vetch at 20 pounds per acre, and then wheat in the mix at 30 pounds per acre. Again, we were planting these cover crops after cotton harvest by drilling the cover crop in, and then chemically terminating these cover crops, usually late April, about 6 weeks prior to cotton planting. We did not apply fertilizer to the cover crop or the cotton crop. At the time we implemented this study, we were interested in seeing if we could provide nitrogen needs with legume cover crops in place of adding inorganic nitrogen or commercial nitrogen. The picture on the bottom right is no-till system that had been in place for about 3 years. So again, is no-till enough in a continuous cotton system such as this? And as you can see, after 3 or 4 years of no-till, there's still a lot of bare ground showing in a no-till system within a low-residue cotton system. This is a slide of stored soil water in the top 2 feet of the soil profile for the year 2013 and 2014 from cover crop planting on the left side through cotton harvest the following year. Right in the center of the graph would be the time period for cover crop termination, around May of 2014, the end of April. As you can see, that time is when cover crops are in their reproductive phase, getting close to maturity when we terminate. And our best performing cover crops being hairy vetch, Austrian pea, and the mixture. And as you can see, greater biomass production, greater water use. So yes, we use soil moisture with our cover crops. But once we terminated that and we were fortunate enough to get a May rain, you can see the infiltration rates jump up very rapidly, and if you look into June, the stored soil moisture is actually higher for some of those cover crops that had a great deficit when we terminated them. So our infiltration rates were enhanced by cover crops. This is another slide of stored soil moisture in the top 2 feet of the profile, and this is for 2014. The red line demonstrates the conventional till, and we bedded or listed the ground in this year. And we had no rain virtually all winter long and throughout the spring. And as you follow that graph, you see conventional till has significantly lower stored soil moisture in the top 2 feet from November through March. And then toward the end of April, Austrian pea, hairy vetch, the blue and the purple treatment had lower soil moisture, which is expected, greater cover crop biomass. Cover crops are using water, depleted the stored soil moisture in the profile. However, right at termination, we had sufficient rainfall and actually had record rainfall in May 2015. But the measurement there, 1st of May, you can see all the treatments are back together, no difference among treatments. Again, using soil moisture with cover crops, but yet we're recapturing that soil moisture with subsequent rain events prior to planting cotton. So this is a bar graph just to show that infiltration rate or the water capture from the time of cover crop termination up until cotton planting. So that 6 week period, what's happening between the time we terminate cover crops to the time we're putting cotton in the ground. So this is for 4 different years, 2013 through 2016. I'll use 2014 as an example. For each set of bars, 3 bars on the right, the purple would be vetch, the blue is pea, and then the orange is the mixture. What this graph shows is the change in stored soil moisture. So the higher the bar is basically greater infiltration or more water capture. So the change in stored soil moisture was greater for the vetch, the pea, and the mixture compared to the crimson clover, conventional till, and the no-till. And in our system, crimson clover has performed poorly, one, because we're planting so late, which is not conducive to good growth for the clover, and drought and other scenarios, but that just has not performed well in our environment compared to hairy vetch and pea. But this is just a graph showing the change in stored soil moisture, water capture over time. 2015, you can see the pea and the vetch having higher change in stored soil moisture. And then 2016, there are some negative ones there, and that's because we had rainfall event right at cover crop termination, followed by a long period of drought that dried out very quickly leading up to planting. We had a great water deficit for hairy vetch because of the biomass production and growth, and then water infiltrated thereafter with a rainfall event. But again, just showing that cover crops can recapture, perhaps we're improving soil water holding capacity, improving soil structure, and increasing our infiltration rates with cover crops. So this is lint yield for a four-year period for a dryland cotton system, 2013 through 2016. So our non-cover crop treatments be the no-till, the yellow bar, and conventional till with the gray bar. Our mix, our pea, and our vetch cover crops and no-till ended up producing about 4 to 6% higher yield over the four-year average. Crimson clover and wheat had just slightly lower yields than our non-cover crop treatments, but no differences among all treatments on a four-year average in a dryland system. So this is net return over the four-year period. No-till represented by the yellow bar, conventional till without a cover crop by the gray bar. There is no statistical difference among the treatments, although we saw about a $20-$30 difference in net returns between non-cover crop treatments and the cover crop treatments. The cover crop seed costs are provided below each treatment. The vetch, about $33 an acre, the pea, about $20, wheat, $8, the mixture, $26, crimson clover, about $23. But even though vetch was a higher seed cost, it provided among the highest returns for the cover crop treatments. But in a dryland system where yields are lower than in an irrigated system, our net returns, there's a greater discrepancy between cover crop treatments and non-cover crop treatments. So the last couple of slides will address ecosystem services you may see with implementing no-till or cover crops. Top left would be soil organic carbon, and then the top right would be carbon mineralization, or CO2, which is a measure of microbial respiration. And then the bottom is ammonium oxidizing bacteria. But in each of these graphs, you can see the legume species should be highlighted, which are in the middle of the graphs, the AP and the HV, Austrian pea and the hairy vetch, for organic carbon and for the CO2 mineralization, and then for the oxidizing bacteria compared to conventional till. So these legume cover crops in these scenarios seem to be benefiting some of these soil health indicators over conventional tillage and no-till without a cover crop in some scenarios. This is a slide showing change in soil nitrate levels over time after cover crop termination. As seen with the ammonium oxidizing bacteria, with hairy vetch and Austrian pea having higher ammonium oxidizing bacteria, which translates to mineralizing soil ammonium into nitrate. And nitrification with time over a six-week period, we see higher nitrate levels in the soil with Austrian pea and hairy vetch compared to our other cover crop treatments. Lastly, this is mycorrhizal colonization on the cotton roots during the growing season from these different cover crop treatments. So the legume cover crops had higher mycorrhizal colonization than conventional till and no-till. Kind of see a stair step of legume cover crops being greater than grass or a mix versus greater than non-cover crop treatments. But again, this is just another soil health indicator of potential soil health benefits from implementing a cover crop and a no-till cotton system. So in conclusion, over the long term, no-till systems have resulted in improved yields. No-till systems that includes cover crops as well as no cover crops, but we definitely have not seen detrimental yields as a result of implementing cover crops in both irrigated and dry land systems. Cover crops and crop rotation can be an important management tool in cotton systems. Soil moisture is again a top concern, and we have shown that soil moisture can be significantly lower due to cover crops by the time of termination. However, stored soil moisture is restored by cash crop planting if adequate rainfall is received. So I always tell our producers in our area, manage for your system and your goals. And if you're considering implementing cover crops, it must be managed for your respective system. So with that, I conclude and hope I've addressed some of your questions or concerns. If you have any follow-up questions, feel free to contact me via email I'll be glad to get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you.